Hey guys, welcome back to the Vivi Podcast. We're lucky to have Dallaire Nafusi with us right down the street. Good friend of mine. He specializes in probate, and he's going to talk to us today about some of the issues that he's seen. He's a litigator, handles these cases personally, has hands-on knowledge of what to look out for, how to protect oneself. Thanks for being here, Dallaire.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Justin. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. So let's start with who you are. You know, your office is right down the street on Lake. What's the address of your office?
We're at 527 South Lake Avenue, Suite 200. And my firm is called Lionheart Legal. I was working for a lot of probate litigation firms in LA County. And I decided to start my own firm September 2016. You can check my website out, lionheartlegal.com, if you're interested in learning more about the firm. But I would like the listeners to kind of understand today the importance of estate planning and how probate comes into play, because with real estate especially, because real estate is the most common asset that I see that people are passing down to the next generation.
Great
or to
point.
Their heirs or and beneficiaries. So it's right. important to understand, if you do own real estate, you know, how to best plan for moving that down the generation, or in the event that you're incapacitated, making sure that the people who you want in control of your financial decisions and your assets, in the event that you cannot make those decisions on your own, actually matriculate, and you make it easier for them to help you during these difficult periods.
This is a great talk for us, because we in our process in working with our clients, we always identify, you know, you just bought a piece of property. You might have heirs or children. You might have do you have a mechanism of action to protect yourself should something happen? So we try to uncover ways to protect our clients, and estate plans are something that we always talk about. I really like the way that you are talking about. Okay, you do that. Is it viable? You know, and with your hands-on experience, we're really going to uncover how people protect themselves. So let's get started. You know.
Yeah, and just a quick disclaimer, nothing in this presentation should be construed as legal advice or tax advice. I'm going to talk to you basically just about what my experiences are in the field and a lot of mistakes I see, because if people plan for this, create a good estate plan, and use a professional to do so, then they're going to be able to make a smooth transition in the event of death or incapacity. People like to take shortcuts to estate planning too. Oh, I just fill out this trust form I got online, or fill out this will form. And they don't really understand that, yeah, you can draft this document and sign it, but the way you sign it may not be valid, recognized by California law. The way you create those documents may not be the way that the law will, the way you create these documents may not be in a manner that's consistent with the formal requirements of the law. Wills are very formal documents, because the legislature doesn't want anybody to just lift up a typed piece of paper with a signature on it and say, yeah, this is the person's will. No, there's authenticity. It needs to be verified as an authentic document. People can create a trust, but they can get no benefit out of it because they didn't do the trust funding properly. These are the right. things I see all the time. And I will tell you, if the people create the trust and they hire an attorney to do so, it's going to be about 1/10 of the price than if, after these people die, there's complications because the estate plan was invalid, or it wasn't, the trust wasn't funded. Yep. And this is going to create 10 times the costs for the people, the beneficiaries who stand to inherit those assets. And it's going to be a nightmare for them. And it might be completely inconsistent with the property owner who's now passed away or has become incapacitated. They might be completely inconsistent with their intent, right, because they didn't record their intent properly, or the way they did record their intent is not recognized by California law. So it's just so important to use a professional, and not only any professional, but a professional who really knows what they're doing in this field.
Right. Well, let's talk about, I mean, the thing that I pulled out of that real quick is 1/10 the cost. So, yeah. I mean, we're talking about passing down real estate through a trust. A tenth of that value is significant. So let's talk about, you know, some of the issues that you see about recording, or I'm just going to let you take it. You know, what do you see?
So let's talk about probate. Probate's a scary word to a lot of people, and they don't want, and people create trusts and wills because they think that it's going to help them avoid probate.
Right.
And it will if it's done properly. Having a will alone will not avoid probate. A lot of people think it does. And then kind of at the end of this podcast, I would like to talk about kind of some self-help techniques that anybody can do today if they're particularly concerned. Often I will get a call, we would like you to do an estate plan. We leave for a foreign country in a couple days. can you get it done before we leave? And my answer is going to be, in 99% of the time, no, I can't.
Right.
It's more involved than something you just do in a day.
Right.
But let's discuss some sort of interim measure you can take. And I want to provide that to the listeners today at the end of the podcast, just so they have some idea of how this world works. But getting back to probate, so the cost for probate is you're going to have to pay an administrator to administer the estate of the decedent. So probate comes up, somebody dies, the person who dies is referred to generally as the decedent, and they have bank accounts, real estate, securities, insurance policies, pensions, annuities, whatever it may be, interests in corporations or LLCs,
right,
in their name, and now they're dead. So probate is the process by which the court vets and appoints somebody to stand in the shoes of this decedent, such that they will act and wrap up all these matters, and then distribute those assets to the people who are entitled to those assets by law. And it's a process that can take anywhere from 6 months to over 5 years. And there's a lot of, it's a complicated process, and most people are not going to be able to do it on their own. They have lives, they have, you know, families and responsibilities, and they're faced with this death, presumably of somebody close to them.
Right.
And now they have to drop everything and look into this and handle this, because, and they might, it might be really pressing because people will die with a mortgage on their house. Who's going to pay the mortgage? You know, what is there a way to stop that? These sorts of questions will come up, or they'll have an income stream or assets that they can use to pay these expenses, but they don't have access to them. They go to the bank. Oh, this is my husband. This is my wife's bank account. I'm their son. I'm their daughter. Whatever. And the bank says, well, your name's not on it. We can't tell you anything. We can't even tell you if there is an actual bank account here. So this can really snowball into a problem, and you're ambushed at a time where you're dealing with a death in the family. And if there was no estate planning or no valid estate planning, then you're going to have to go through probate as the heir or as the beneficiary to the assets. You're going to have to get the ball rolling on that. And the benefits of estate planning is avoiding it. So let's look at the downside initially. What are the costs of probate? So you have, the costs are set by law for the attorney and for the probate administrator, whomever that may be. First step is you need to get the probate administrator appointed. So the fee is set by law. You can reference probate code sections 10,800 and 10,810 of the California Probate Code. And they determine the value based on the, what's called, quote unquote, the gross estate. So that is a formula. And the gross estate, let's say if you have a $500,000 house with a $400,000 mortgage on it, that's the only asset in the probate estate. We're going to use a simple example. Even though there's only $100,000 in equity in the house, the probate fee is calculated off of the gross value. So we're disregarding the mortgage. We're just looking at the $500,000. And you don't get to pick what the price of the house right. is. The court will appoint a probate referee,
right.
which you will pay for,
right.
to set the value of the house and do the appraisal. And then that will be the value of the house.
Right.
So now we have the gross value of the estate. What is the price? Well, the price is 4% of the first 100,000, 3% of the next 100,000, 2% of the next 800,000, 1% of the next 9 million.
Right.
That's the statutory fee for the attorney.
Right.
In addition to this amount, the same amount is the statutory fee for the administrator of the estate. Another name for an administrator can be an executor or a personal representative.
Right.
If there's real estate involved, if there's a foreclosure that needs to be stopped,
right.
if there's a dispute and there's litigation, pertaining to two people who want to be the administrator, maybe they're fighting over who wants to be administrator. In addition to the statutory fee that I just went over, the formula, there's going to be extraordinary fees.
Wow.
And for an attorney and an administrator, that's usually hourly. And I've seen hourly rates anywhere in LA County from $200 to $800 or $900 an hour. So that is kind of what you're looking at on the administrator fees and the attorney's fees. So on that hypothetical $500,000 estate we were discussing, we got $4,000 plus $3,000 plus $6,000, which is $13,000.
Times two.
Times two. Now we're at $26,000. Plus you got to pay the filing fee, the probate referee fee, and all the associated fees and costs that the courthouse takes.
Yeah.
So we're adding a little more to that.
Yep.
And this can all be avoided if you have a trust.
Right.
Because now, right. instead of all the assets, the house, the bank accounts, being in the name of the dead person, now it's in the name of the dead person as trustee of the trust. The trust presumably will name a successor trustee.
Right.
Now you can show the bank, hey, listen, I'm not the son or the daughter or the husband or the wife, which the bank's not going to care about,
right.
contrary to everybody's intuition.
Right.
You could say, look, I'm the trust successor trustee on the legal document. Here's the death certificate.
Right.
Change the title of the house, the bank account,
right.
into my name as right. successor trustee. Now,
right.
we have a person who can do that.
Right.
Also, in addition, if you go through the probate, the court may want to set a bond. So now you have to post a bond on the value of all the assets in the estate. So again, in this hypothetical example, $500,000, you have to post a $500,000 bond throughout the entirety of the time.
Right.
And there are bonding companies. It's not like you need to post a cash bond. But they're going to charge you a premium on
right.
that.
No, absolutely. So we're talking about in that hypothetical situation, which I think is probably fairly common or
yeah.
much more common. We're talking about $100,000 in equity or in real money. We're talking about losing realistically 30% of that minimum to fees and to attorneys and the administrator. This is significant. That's almost a third of that estate that could have been passed down if the proper protections were made, the proper attorneys were spoken to, right? And you spend a very small fraction of that getting a proper estate plan drawn up and made sure that all the mechanisms of action are appropriate.
Right, and I'm aware of kind of my competition, what they charge for estate planning, and conservatively, on the high end, I don't charge this much, but on the high end, you know, some people charge $8,000 for an estate plan, but really, you can see how even on the high end, that's going to be worth it because you're getting a benefit of at least $15,000, $16,000, and you can leave that wealth to your heirs without that stress and headache. And not to mention, you know, the probate appointment process to get somebody in there, that's going to take two to six months generally.
Right.
And when you do a trust and everything is funded properly, you can go into as soon as you have the death certificate, you can pretty much go to the bank and get those assets changed into your name. And it's just so much easier.
Right, which has no, you know, the value on your personal time, the value on the removal of stress in that time frame with those assets in play is high, right?
Absolutely.
The value of time and the reduction of stress at that stressful time. You know, as you're talking, I'm really recognizing how your experience in litigation really predisposes you to all the complications, much more so than someone who just sits down and writes estate plans. You do estate planning too.
Right.
Right? So I really want to stress that that's something that you have direct contact with something you enjoy, the litigation portion, right?
But at times.
But it also really gives you hands-on experience on how to protect people through the estate planning process.
Absolutely, because oftentimes, and again, I mean, I make way more fees in the litigation side than the estate planning side, and you know, I can tell people to get estate plans all day, and if they don't follow that, that's fine, because I mean, I will make more on the litigation end when all the problems arise, when they have to go through probate. So it's really in your benefit, but it's hard for a lot of people because the benefits don't really get realized until they're either incapacitated or they've passed away.
Right.
And you know, in addition to transferring wealth after death, estate plans, there's other benefits. You can use them to appoint somebody to make medical decisions for you in the event that you're unable to do so, you're unconscious, maybe you're in a comatose state, things like this. You know, would you want to be on life support or not? Would you want heroics to be taken or do you want do not resuscitate? If you have minor children, who do you want to act as their guardian in the event that their mother or father are unable to? These are all things we can do with estate planning.
Right.
So the litigation comes up. I mean, I often find myself reading a trust or reading a will, and there's been a dispute among people as to who's in charge or who gets what, which are the common scenarios that come up. And I read the estate plan and I'm thinking in my head, gosh, if this one sentence was just tweaked or these two words were removed or something, we would not be in this mess of tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees, you know, and 2 or 3 years in the system.
It seems amazing to me that the proper wording can come down to one or two words. I think that that's something that we have to stress. Having the desire to go and get an estate plan is fantastic.
Yeah.
Who is doing this for you is really important.
Absolutely.
You know, and I can't stress enough Dallaire's hands-on experience with this. He's a good guy to go see. He's right down the street from us. I've met with him a bunch of times, and I just really trust his opinion, and that's why we have him here today. You know, Dallaire, we're going to have you in to create a series on this, but let's keep going. You know, what else do you see that we need to watch out for?
So a lot of people want to know also about taxes and things like this. Yeah. And again, just to remind, nothing in this presentation should be construed as legal advice. But there are certain types of financial instruments, such as insurance policies. Mm-hmm. And when those pay out, sometimes the IRS can consider them income.
Right.
And sometimes they can consider them an inheritance.
Okay.
A good estate planning attorney is going to address those issues with you as a client, and make sure that any sort of payouts on these policies will not be considered income to the extent that is possible and avoidable.
Right.
The other thing is, you know, most people are. The inheritance tax, another name for it, or the actual name they use is the gift and estate tax.
Okay,
that's not applicable to the vast majority of people out there, but people do usually have that question. So, if the person died in 2019, and this was recently, there were changes to the tax code.
Okay.
The exemption, which is the amount you can have and not be subject to tax, is $11.4 million per person. So for a married couple, that's going to double to $22.8 million. So if you as an individual die with less than $11.4 million of assets in your name, your heirs are not going to need to worry about estate taxes.
Well, that's great news
for me. So, and if it's a married couple, you know, double that.
Right.
So, but if you are, the tax rate's going to be 40% on that. Another thing is giving gifts. The annual gift tax exemption from one person to another person is $15,000 per year. So you can give $15,000 to somebody, your husband or wife can give $15,000 to somebody in that same year, not be subject to estate tax, and then you can do the same thing again next year. But that's kind of the tax, that the two kind of common tax issues that come up.
Okay.
So if you do estate planning, you know, we talked about these potential costs.
Yep.
Without these costs, if you just do the trust, you know, we're cutting those down to realistically less than $10,000.
Right.
And there's the benefit. There's other kind of benefits you can gain from estate planning. One of those is asset protection.
Right.
Most trusts, or at least the common types of wealth transfer trusts that people create, do not generally provide asset protection for the people creating the trust. However, they may provide asset protection for the beneficiaries.
Right.
You can hold those assets in trust for a beneficiary that's not created by that beneficiary, and then creditors of that beneficiary cannot get to those assets until those distributions are made to the beneficiary. So you can hold the house or hold the assets, or pay the expenses of the beneficiary directly out of the trust. That way, nothing ever goes into their name. This also can come into play if you have if you're dealing with a special needs person in your family, to qualify for certain benefits. If you create a special needs trust for that person, you can allow them to have a lot more money for their benefit, put aside for their benefit, and yet still qualify for Medi-Cal. Because usually if you have more than $2,000 in assets, you will not qualify for Medi-Cal. So, and you don't usually want a person with special needs to have money in their name, because they might be developmentally disabled. It might be like giving that money to a child. They might not know how to manage it. So estate planning can kind of address all of these things. And just kind of mainly, you want the control. You want your wishes to be carried out in the event that you're either gone or you're not able to make those decisions because, God forbid, you know, you're comatose or you're just incompetent for some reason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is all very important stuff, right? I mean, there's no doubt that, you know, I just always look at this from our viewer's perspective or someone that's listening to this podcast, right? I look at myself as a pretty normal guy in Los Angeles, working really, really, really hard from day one, from the day that I finished college, grinding it out, you know, along the way. You get married like I did. You have your first child.
You pick up your first piece of real estate.
You pick up your second child. And all along the way, you really never get to take your foot off the gas pedal in this town. So I think about working so hard to create the opportunity to own assets or to build wealth. And then I think about how foolish it is to not invest the time and resources to protect all of that work, and it like makes my stomach hurt a little bit for people thinking like, man, if something happens, like you put all of that, all everything that you're working to pass down, you put all of that at risk. It seems not just foolish, it's just entirely short-sighted.
Right, and most wealth transfers from families to the next generation is wiped out in two generations.
Right,
and you know. A lot of times you can get ahead of that problem and address it and avoid it.
Right.
Just kind of working with Vimvy in your field, you know, you deal with assisting people selling, liquidating their real estate assets.
Yeah.
And it's so important in my experiences with you, Justin, and just getting to know your business and getting to know Vimvy and just. You guys have an awesome office here, by the way.
Thank you.
I really want to go play a match of ping pong. I'm very tempted because I love playing ping pong.
I'll say, do you like playing ping pong?
I do.
It's something we actually do here, not during the workday. But yeah, it's something we do. And thanks for touching on that. I mean, we're trying to do something different here, right? And that translates to the customer experience. We looked at great companies that really focus on the customer experience, and those are the ones that are doing well. That's the new business of now. Amazon, entirely focused on the customer experience. You know, you do something with them, you know it's getting there the next day on time, and if not, you get a second one sent to you out of the blue, and their customer service is contacting you before you say that there's a problem. You know, we're really looking at customer experience, aligning our business interests directly with the consumer. And we want to translate that experience into our office space. All of our competitors are right down the road. We encourage everyone to go visit them. Go touch it, feel it, see it. It's a 1970s, I always joke, it's a 1970s cube farm. The only thing that's missing are the Lucky Strikes, and it's true. It doesn't feel present, modern. It doesn't feel like a new way of doing things, and we're trying to do that. But all of that is done on the bedrock. We're doing this at half. So
yeah, and it's a great value proposition.
Yeah,
you know, as I see, because I work with brokers, because often when people pass away, the real estate needs to be sold and divvied up and liquidated, and it's such a difference to work with a broker who really knows what they're doing. So.
Right.
In this world that I'm in of administrators, executors, probates, trustees, conservators, and guardians, these sales may be subject to court confirmation.
Right.
They may require a court hearing. And it's a nightmare when you're working with a broker who really doesn't know these things.
Right.
In almost all real estate transactions, you have, for example, a sale contract that the buyer and the seller sign.
Right.
However, if you're an administrator, an executor, a trustee of a trust that's under court supervision, a conservator, or a guardian, you may not have been given the authority by the court to sign a sale contract. And if you have a good attorney representing you in that capacity, they're going to tell you that. And that's going to drive an uninformed broker crazy.
Right.
They need to make disclosures in the listing agreement.
Right.
They need to work with the buyer and let them, the buyer or their agent, know.
Right.
Like, hey, listen, we don't have a sales contract. I can't give you that. If you want to buy it, this is what you got to do.
Yeah.
And you got to show up, or the agent's got to show up at the court hearing.
Yeah.
It's got to be on record. You got to have the deposit. These are the laws. This is the only way it's going to get approved.
Yeah.
And it's such a pleasure to work with a broker who knows these things. Because if you don't do that and you work, because people want to use their friend, or this is who my mom would have used, or right. things like that.
Right.
And I always have the discussion with the client, and I always have the discussion with the broker when they're insisting on that, and I say, do you have probate experience?
Right.
Because this is your job.
Right.
This is not my job.
Correct.
Don't turn on me
right.
and say, well, what does the lawyer say? I don't represent the buyer's
right.
agent or the seller's agent in the transaction.
Right.
I represent my client.
Correct.
I do this the court stuff,
yep.
but the court stuff's not going to go through. We're not going to get the orders to sell the property
yep.
without having the proper process done by the seller or the seller's agent leading up to that.
So, great point, Dallaire. And when we founded this business, we wanted to, number one, build it on a bedrock of undeniable value. We found that undeniable value lends itself perfectly to times of stress for the public. It's not the only place that we're transacting, but in places, in times of probate, when we're talking about passing money from one place to another, and the mechanism of that action is the sale of a home, why give half of that commission to an agent or broker? We also looked at, that's why we're transacting half. But my partner, you know, Mark McFarland Esquire, non-practicing attorney, but an attorney with current license, we really looked at the processes, and we really looked at our competitors, and what we found is there's a gaping hole in the professionalism that's brought to the table when someone says, hey, I'm a local realtor, I'd love to transact all your probate homes, right? Or all your homes in probate. That's something that they actually teach new agents to go out and do when you take your courses to go get licensed. Who put that in the book? It's terrifying to me, right? But you know why? It's because you can relationship sell that someone into giving you that home. You don't have to go and seek it out. You don't have to go out and develop a relationship with the person that's going through probate. You can develop a relationship by just sticking out your hand, and maybe someone will be lucky enough to give you one. If
right.
the attorney doesn't have a personal relationship with his or her client.
And VimV, I'm so comfortable, Justin, because I do
yep.
know you as one of the co-owners,
yep.
and you know you have an attorney as well, Mark.
Yep.
You mentioned
yep.
as a co-owner, and you have such a value proposition, such a high focus on customer experience and customer satisfaction. So,
right.
you know, if I am sending someone your way, I'm comfortable doing that because I know you're going to look,
absolutely.
you're going to make me look good by doing that as a professional.
Absolutely, and that thanks for saying that, Dallaire. It's really about being a professional extension of your practice, right? We have to set the bar higher. As a company, we have to act and set the bar higher so that when you're comfortable sending us someone, and then we transact in such a way that we're a professional extension of your practice. We can't have anything go back to you. We can't have any unsatisfied or customers or any piece of the transaction that doesn't represent you to the fullest, which is why another thing that VimV does that no one else does is that we put a guarantee in our listing agreement, right? So for your client that doesn't know Vimvy, right? We launch in January, entirely possible. But we're the only brokerage nationally that we found that puts a guarantee directly in our listing agreement. If for any reason your referral is not happy through the transaction process, we're going to give our portion of commission back to them.
Yeah, and that's amazing. I mean, it's just no risk for the clients.
Yep.
And I've never seen anything like it. Get hit up by brokers. I can't tell you how often it happens. And I guess that makes sense. Now I understand a little bit why it's happening.
Yeah.
So if I want to give kind of the listeners now, maybe you're worried about, I don't have an estate plan. Like, who needs an estate plan? So let me go through some myths. So kind of some things that people hear that I think are incorrect and need to be addressed. So one of the myths is, you know, trusts are only for the wealthy. And this is not true. I explained how if you have a house with just $100,000 in equity, you know, that you can save tens of thousands of dollars with estate planning, even if that's all you have. Is there, people talk about, well, there's what's quote unquote a small estate. So let me explain to you what that is. So you don't need probate in every situation, but the situations are going to be very rare. So these situations are the decedent died owning $150,000 in assets or less total. None of those assets include real estate. So those two things need to be met. Less than $150,000 total and no real estate is involved. So if you have a piece of land that's worth $5,000-$10,000, you're still going through probate. And that's all you own. So so it's just the real estate. I mean, that's really what I see as the most common asset that people have. People want to live the American dream, own their own home. And they want to pass, you know, it gets passed on after after people pass away. So it is not only for the wealthy. If you are a homeowner in California, you definitely need to think about estate planning. If you own more than $150,000 in assets, you definitely need to think about estate planning.
Great point.
Another myth I hear is, you know, you can use like a document preparation service to do your estate planning. And I kind of addressed this earlier in the podcast, but it's not just about creating the document. It needs to be executed properly. For example, a will, you sign a will, you get it notarized. That is not valid. Wills need to be witnessed. What does witnessed mean? You need two disinterested witnesses. I've seen wills where the witnesses are the person who's taking under the will. That's not a valid witnessing. There was a case in law school that they taught us about. There were two witnesses. They were disinterested witnesses, but one was outside of the room when the person signed, and one was in the room when the person signed. That was not valid witness. So there's so many pitfalls in the document can be perfect, but the way it's executed also needs to be proper for the courts to recognize the validity of the document.
You know, it's interesting. You brought up a company, a document preparation service. You know, we have competitors in this space that are what we call discount brokerages, And the comparison there is you can do this. You can get someone to spit out a number that is going to be extremely low. But what's the service behind that? And what's the success rate of that discount number?
And what's the value that you're getting? Because when you die and we have this will, does it do anything for you? Does it do anything that you thought it would do? And if the answer is no, you just wasted that money that you paid. You paid less than maybe it would cost an attorney, but You didn't get any value. You didn't get anything back for it.
So the second thing, I brought up earlier how, and this is interesting. So the second thing that they teach you when you're going to get your license is to go find listings that are for sale by owner, which is sort of the same thing. And businesses that focus on this sort of for sale by owner, there's Rex, Help You Sell, all sorts of companies. And why do they coach new licensees to go after these people? Well, number one, it's not working.
Yeah.
It's not working for them. And that's a direct correlation to what you're saying. Don't think that because you have the paperwork signed or that someone pointed you toward a cut rate way of doing things, that it's really going to provide the mechanism of action to actually provide protection or to get your home sold. Right.
I mean, and there's parallels. How does it work out for the client? For sale by owner, how does it work out for the owner?
Right.
Are they happy? Did they get value? Did they get the service that's needed to market and get the highest price possible?
Exactly.
Or did they just get very little? They got nothing. They never interacted with a human being. Nobody put any effort into it. I mean, that's... Really, you want to get the value. You can spend, you can save $1,000, but what you saved is, what you spent is worth nothing. Or you could spend a little more, make sure you're using somebody who's a competent professional, who's going to give you the value. I mean, in your case, money back guarantee, right?
Right.
I mean, there's no...
Well, that's the whole thing. And,
yeah.
And there's no payment up front. So all of our work is done in-house. All of our people are salaried, not commissioned. The old way of doing things isn't wrong entirely. I mean, it's working. There's very large brokerages right down the street from us. And they house some great people. There's no doubt there's some great people there. But the reason that people are... All of these startups are popping up. Purple Brick grabbed $177 million in Blue, $81 million in less than a year, and expanded across the U.S. and retracted in less than a year because they were doing it wrong. The old way of the new model, the new financial model is here. The old way of doing things, local, brick and mortar, experienced professionals, leaves a lot of room to be improved on the old way. But for the top guys doing it the right way, it works, and it works well. You need someone to guide, just like a good attorney, you need someone to guide you through the process.
Right.
You need help negotiating. You need an interpretation of the data. That's why the broker agent relationship exists with the customer. That's why attorneys exist and will continue to profit over LegalZoom. Right?
I hope so. I hope so, because another thing I see with, you know, like the Legal Zooms and the Rocket Lawyers and the Nolos and these other document preparation services in this estate planning world is, well, I created a trust, I filled out the forms, I signed it, okay, great, your trust is valid, let's say. Who told you how to fund the trust? Who told you how to record the deed to transfer your home or your investment property or whatever it is you may have into your trust so that it will actually work out as a smooth transition when you're not around?
Right.
Nobody's going to even talk to you or tell you about this stuff. They just send you the form, fill out the form, you sign it, and you think everything's honky-dory.
Right.
But a good estate planning attorney is going to tell you, look, this is the document you show the bank. We'll record this deed.
Right.
We'll do this and that, and this is what Lionheart Legal offers to its clients that you're not going to see with these document preparation services.
Right, fantastic. So let's get back. You know, I think that we've definitely gone through the case for Lionheart Legal and for you handling these issues, and I really want to encourage anyone that's found this podcast or found us by working with us to contact Blair and really sit down with him. But let's give, you know, we alluded earlier, we're going to have you come back in for other podcasts. You alluded earlier to ways that people can protect themselves quickly.
Yeah.
How do we do that?
So every once in a while, you know, I'll get a call or I'll get an email from another attorney and I'll say something like, you know, clients or I and my wife are going out of town, we're going to so-and-so country, and we're leaving, you know, on Friday, and it's like Wednesday or something. We need to do our estate planning before we leave because something might happen to us. Like, can you do that? And 99% of the time, I'm going to just say, no, I can't. You know, it's a, we could get it done maybe in 2 weeks, but, you know, a day and all the logistics involved, it's just not realistic. And it's not realistic for me to, or anybody really, to just drop everything and do something like that. But, and it's an involved decision. It might involve the client doing a lot of thinking on their end and making sort of more important decisions about, you know, what happens when they're not around. So it's a bit of an involved process, but I tell people, look, make a holographic will. So let's talk a little about what's a holographic will. Holographic will is different from a formal will, and it's basically something in your handwriting that you sign, that you have words in there that evidence it's your intent for what happens when you pass away.
Okay.
And so I just say, write out something in your handwriting, say, this is my last will and testament, I appoint so-and-so as my executor to serve without bond, or if you would like them to post a bond, then don't put that, obviously.
Yeah.
And I leave everything to my wife or everything to my husband. Those are kind of the more common ones. That way, at least there's something there. Sign it and date it. If you don't date it, you have other wills out there, the law is going to presume that whatever date you put, whatever date you created that document is before the date of anything else.
Okay.
That's called a holographic will. I don't understand how holographic means handwritten, but I thought it meant something completely different personally, but that's what it means. And that's just something that somebody can do kind of in that situation.
Right.
There's a lot of interesting questions about, well, what if it's initialed? And there's some, people love stories, so I would like to give a couple of stories of some holographic wills. Some of these are not in California, but it's kind of more interesting aspects of my job and the stories that come up. So there was a guy in Canada, he was a farmer, and he got stuck under his tractor, and he thought he was going to die. So he took out a pocket knife, and he carved onto the hood of his tractor, if I die, I would like to leave everything to my wife, something along those lines. And then he put his initials or something on.
Okay.
And that was considered a valid will.
Really?
Yeah, that was... The courts over there, I think this was in Canada, they cut out a piece of the fender that he wrote on, they took it to the courthouse, and they lodged it, and that was his will. There's another example, I think this was in California, where there was a guy who was going to marry a belly dancer, and... He was in bed, and they weren't married yet, and I guess he thought he was dying, so he went to the wall and he wrote on the wall, and this was in Los Angeles, of course, in Los Angeles County, and they cut out the piece of the drywall that he wrote it on. They lodged it with the court. That was his will. Yeah. There's another example of a woman who had a handbag, very expensive handbag, and she just took marker and just wrote all over it, I want to leave everything to whoever she wanted to leave it to, and signed it and dated it, and it's right there, and they took the person. And that was her will. They lodged the original will, because sometimes you got to lodge the original will with the court.
Wow.
And you get these crazy stories about holographic wills that I find really interesting.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious. So make sure, before you go anywhere, that you write it down in your own handwriting, write out your name, no initials, and date it. But you can put it on pretty much anything.
Yeah, you can. Yes, exactly. You can. The courts have found those valid. And again, I stress, this is not going to help you avoid probate
right.
or give you a lot of these benefits.
Right.
But if you're about to die, maybe like our farmer in under the tractor,
yeah. You
know, that's something you should know. Or if you're about to take a big trip, maybe you don't have time to deal with this. You want to deal with it when you get back. It, you know, it's a good interim measure to take. And you know, it's what I would do basically.
Yeah. Well, this is great stuff to learn. We encourage everybody, guys, thanks for listening. Dallaire, thank you for being here.
Thanks again for having me.
It's been fantastic. Great. So what we're going to do is have Dallaire back. His expertise really is something that we want to dive further into and make sure that we get more information. Make sure that you protect yourself from heart attacks that might be induced from a date with a belly dancer. And we thank you for being here, Dallaire. Thanks
very
much. I appreciate
it. Thanks so much.
All right. Guys, we'll talk to you next time.